Must we? Well,
why don't we take another couple of weeks to talk about these fucking animals?
Well, okay, yeah, I can understand with one of them.
Well, then, but it wouldn't matter what they
are. Where should we start?
About 2 weeks. How much more do you want to hear them?
Well, one of them I'm quite happy to hear again, actually.
What's that?
Well, let's start with that. The Primus album.
No.
The Desaturated
Seven. You
can't
fucking be serious.
I love this album. It's a fucking awesome album. It's really cool. It's just weird. It's really weird, but it wormed into my brain. And I've listened to this album, I don't know, 15, 16 times in the last couple of weeks.
You are touched in the fucking head, sir. This is seriously... the greatest load. This is, I mean, the problem is there's never been a good Primus album because it's always just a massive bag of wank. I mean, Winona's Big Brown Beaver was proof that if you hurl enough shit at a wall, eventually you'll make a recognizably pretty pattern or at least a fucking ink blot that someone can interpret as something interesting. But I remember listening to the album that Winona came off thinking, oh, I really like Winona's Big Brown Beaver. I want to hear the rest of the album. The rest of the album was a bunch of incoherent, drug-fucked shit.
Yeah.
This album is just incoherent shit. There's not even any evidence of any fun drugs being involved. And if I wanted to listen to weird jizz, we would have picked more King Gizzard.
No, I think it's better than King Gizzard. I really like their weird, bassy sort of aesthetic drink. But it just wormed into my brain. The first songs, I actually think the album gets better and better every song too.
Is there an overarching narrative? Because I figured there probably is, but I was so bored with it, I couldn't be bothered trying to figure out whether it was. It sounded like there was some kind of overarching. It was like a bootleg rock opera of some description.
Yeah, it does definitely has that feel, and that's how I sort of felt how it started off, just as obscure as they could get it. And I'm talking musically, not lyrically, you know.
No, it's obscure lyrically just as much.
But and then it just felt like it had momentum musically. It sort of got into something about halfway through the album. But I realised that it is not for 99% of the population, maybe even higher.
As a doctor, I don't endorse anybody expose themselves to this.
You are going to be very disappointed when this makes my top five at the end of the year.
I know you're mentally ill, fella. Signing to do a podcast with me, you're not fucking well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
No, this album is bad and you should feel bad.
Okay. Oh, I don't feel bad. I feel quite good, but that might
that's
be the red
you're
wine.
A fucking deviant. I've just switched to red. I was finishing off the white, but I've switched to Argentine Pinot Noir.
Wow, very fancy Pinot.
It was all of $13 a fucking bottle.
Yeah. The Killers on the other hand.
I think the Grenache was better.
Yeah, I like Grenache better than Pinot.
Well,
the Killers on the other hand.
Today in wine.
Malbec's the best.
The Argentine Malbec is fucking amazing. Yeah. I don't think they can do Pinot quite as well, but that's because I'm spoiled because we're so close to fucking insane Pinot land.
I just don't like Pinot. It just doesn't do anything for me. But Malbec.
Central Otago Pinot is a different species to most Pinot. Australian Pinot is terrible. It's just stony fucking backwash.
The Beanley Dans. Now, I don't know whether it's just...
The Beanley Dans sounds like some sort of fucking rockabilly band.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know whether it's they just don't trust any wine that doesn't have it, you know, Merlot or Shiraz on it, but Oh man, you always get Malbec in the $6 and $7 bin, and it's just fucking great wine.
Perfect.
Yeah. And I get quite upset when I come there and there's just, you know, cheap ass fucking Shiraz there, and I'm like, where's my $30 Malbec reduced down to $7?
Malbec is just syrupy and just good. It's really good. I actually bought a couple of bottles of Malbec and Spanish Grenache from the international section of Countdown. I think they were like fucking $10 a bottle each, so I thought that was just about right for me.
It made
my life better.
Anyway,
we were talking about the Killers. Mm. Because we're contractually obliged to.
The Killers are an album that
we're
should
not
really
contractually obliged to mention Jack Rewald again, are we? Because I'm over that.
No.
Were you a fan of these guys at the time in period? No, you were.
Never listened to them before. Yeah. And I was listening to it and going, this should be stuff that I'm right into. Like, it's got, this particular album, I don't know if all their stuff's like this, but it's got that 80s pastiche. They're ripping off some 80s stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is that they also decided to rip off Richard Marx in a couple of their songs.
Is and that that's the second Richard Marx reference in Two After Darks? I've had enough of your Marxist fucking tendencies, fella. This can't continue. This will not be abided.
I think it's Life to Come and Some Kind of Love. It's just, oh my cheesy God, ballads, I wanted to open my... But not even good cheesy ballads. Like,
but there are no good cheesy ballads.
Well, there's cheesy ballads where... Like November Rain, right, is a cheesy ballad, but it's a good cheesy ballad.
Yeah, but it's also a massive banging pile of wank against the guitar song.
Yeah.
And it goes for 4 days, so, you know... You get value for money in terms of length.
That's true. You get good money.
You're paid by the
hour. I don't know. There was a couple of songs I liked. I liked The Man. I liked, I think it's Run for Cover. But even the good songs were fairly, like, I was like, oh yeah, I like this song. And then I was like, okay, because we had the 3 weeks, I'd look at the album and go, so what's the first song you want to listen to? And I go, well, I know I don't want to listen to those two. I remember I don't want to listen to those two, but I literally can't tell you anything else about the other songs.
You're reverse prioritizing, like, I'm not that one, not that one, not that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's like, well, I've listened to it once. I don't have to listen to those songs again. I did listen to it briefly before the recording just to refresh my memory. And I was like, oh, man, these are just fucking terrible ballads. They're just... Ugh.
But I mean, this is a lot of clangy 80s synth pop with shitty ballads infused in it. It's much more synth poppy than Hot Fuzz, which was their big first album. But they also didn't go. I mean, so the brief story of the Killers was they had this first album which was synth pop but more some indie rock kind of overtones, and people know the songs, you know, Somebody Told Me and so on and so forth. And then they had Mr. Brightside. And then they had their second album, which was basically Bruce Springsteen ripoff, which made no sense at all. And people just went, why are you doing this? Why don't you do the thing you were doing? And then they've had a couple of subsequent albums. And this is probably the most 80s synthy pop thing that they've done.
But I like 80s synthy pop. Like, yeah. LaRue, fucking awesome. Love it. It's like, you know.
This is your bag, shit 80s synth pop. I mean, this is your area.
Yes.
Why isn't this good 80s synth pop? What's bad about it?
I think the ballads just... But it's fairly forgettable, too. Like the LaRue album, right? I listen to it. Even now, I listen to it. And I'm just humming the riffs, like the little synth riffs all day long. And
that's La Stormru, the Central Coast Mariners defender, in case you're wondering, folks, for international listeners. Did a shit job this afternoon. They go a goal up and ship two against Perth. The A-League's good this year, folks, just so you know. Pro tip from me.
This just has nothing to remember it by. Like, there's just no... The hooks aren't good, basically, yeah. I think, is the problem.
They're bad songs. They're not interesting... Pop songs, they're shit. Yeah. Boring, boring pop songs. They kind of levitate between being a shit version of Electric Six, so basically what we have in Electric Six now, and shit U2. And it's...
And the ballads are way worse than any of those.
Well, the ballads are kind of terrible.
U2's never written a ballad that bad.
I don't know, man.
I don't think so.
Have you heard their last album?
No, actually, I haven't.
It's probably on your iTunes somewhere. And the fucking the hubris in calling their album Wonderful Wonderful. I guess they couldn't call it Shit Shit, because that's really what it is. But the lovely thing is that their last song, the last song on the album's set, is called Have All the Songs Been Written? And you think, in their case, yes, they fucking have. All your songs have been written. Have. You've run out of ideas. It's time to stop. Go do something else.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about something a lot more fun. Tell me about Deep Purple Machine Head.
So I can't remember. It was so we recorded the our last episode apparently about 9 months ago in a kitchen, a long way away, and I can't remember what we said and what we didn't say about Deep Purple at the time. But Deep Purple are one of those bands that. They're sort of legendary bands of a particular era, in this case the late 60s, early 70s, and you sort of couch them with other bands that are around at the start of heavy metal, like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. I think I've always sort of put those three together. You could argue these guys have probably tarnished their reputation more than those guys by not fucking off when the opportunity was available to them. I mean, Led Zeppelin's aura and mystique is built on the fact that they ended when the first lineup of the band ended, whereas Deep Purple and also Black Sabbath to the same extent went through so many lineup changes and so many new singers and new guitarists and all the rest of it that you just end up washing your legacy out so much that you end up being fucking Kamal at the X Services Club. Yeah. You know,
you're at Twin Towns.
Yeah, you're at Twin Towns. You're the Australian Easy Beats experience. You know, that's really where you are.
The best story that to illustrate that is the saxophonist. Is it which Ferris brother is the saxophonist for INXS?
Oh, I can't remember. Sax offenders. Isn't that Kirk Pengilly who's married?
Yeah,
to
he's married to Elaine Beachley. Steph Gilmore? Lane Beachley? Steph Gilmore.
Lane Beachley, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Steph's not attached as far as I understand.
So they went into an RSL or a club somewhere in central New South Wales and there was an INXS cover band with no saxophonist. He's just like, really? Really?
Charge your glasses for the third telling of that anecdote.
I just think it's just fucking... You could either take it two ways.
You get ejected. I mean, there's no need. You don't need a saxophonist.
Well, someone's probably playing that line on a keyboard with some really bad synths.
Yeah, Adam would be. That's exactly. I'm sure if they any of the bands Adam's been in have ever done any INXS covers, they would have just had him with the right
on
hand
on a keyboard
on the MIDI, giving it the fucking whatever. Saxophones are just fucking brass bagpipes. We've discussed it before. But particular Machine Head, 1972, had what people tend to refer to as Deep Purple's classic lineup: Ian Gillan, Richie Blackmore, John Lord, Roger Glover, and I've forgotten the drummer's name. Pace, I think it is. So the legacy's been tarnished by this continuing fucking ad infinitum, almost no original parts. Although. It made me wonder what, as a fan, you feel bad when you see a band doing that, you know, a band touring under the same name when they might have like one original member left. But and AC/DC is a perfect example of this. Who's left? Who's an original member of AC/DC who's still in the band? Angus Young.
Yeah.
The end. That's all there is. But we've talked about this before. In their case... I kind of feel they've built up this industry and they feel like they need to keep supporting this industry by continuing to tour. They need to keep the fucking truck drivers and the merch sellers in business. It's not so much trying to feed themselves. But even if you're just a band that doesn't have that kind of thing and you just want to get out and make music, what loyalty, what fucking responsibility do you have to the people who say you're fucking your legacy over? I mean, who cares? This is a bit like sports people who come back when they're fucking long washed and say, oh, you're tarnishing your legacy. It's their legacy to tarnish. I mean,
yeah, and do whatever the fuck they want.
Exactly right. I always wonder about that sort of stuff because it's a it's not a place to tell them to fuck off, is it?
Well, it's not, but we have several times.
No, we invented reverse Patreon for this purpose entirely. Foo Fighters, I hope you're listening.
I can think of one quote recently that we said, look, we're quite happy for old bands to keep making music, but
except
in this case,
you.
Can you please just go onto your farm and lock yourself in the cabin? Dear. But the funny thing about this album that I found was I enjoyed the songs I knew the least. Smoke on the Water, I almost thought that was the worst song of the album.
It's probably the most basic. But I think it's also because we've heard it so much that its purity gets lost in the fact that, oh, fuck this song again. It's a little bit like Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
If you sit down and you really fucking listen to Stairway to Heaven, it's like, this is a really cool, interesting, complicated song. But when you, if you've got the radio on because you're in 1972 or something, or you're in rural New South Wales and nothing else works, I was on a car trip in someone else's car, and the only option we had was to listen to FM radio, and that was a fun experience. They actually played that Killers, one of the songs off the Killers album. That was the point at which I realised I fucking hated it. But what was the point I was making? But if you actually, but because songs like Stairway to Heaven have been so overexposed, it's really hard to. And this, you could say the same about Smells Like Teen Spirit. It was just, it's been so overexposed that it's hard. You actually have to stop and think and listen to them carefully to absorb the how clever and complex they actually are. I mean, the thing about both Smells Like Teen Spirit and Smoke on the Water is their simplicity, is their complexity. They've just nailed everything they set out to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was. I remember watching the Late Show Champagne Edition DVDs and them having to, which were recorded 15 or 10, no, maybe 15,
yeah,
maybe.
A good lot of years later.
A good lot of years later.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, some of the vox pops they're doing and some of the skits they're doing, and they're like, you know, this looks so tired to us now.
Yeah. But what people don't,
what people don't realize is that no one was doing this when we were doing it. Like,
yeah.
Literally, this was seen as cutting edge. You know, just walking around with a little home video recorder, approaching people on the street. No one was doing that. The only vox pops he did was with a cameraman with a camera so big that it fucking dwarfed the guy holding it. You know, it's pretty obvious that you were from Channel 9 or Channel 10.
Yeah.
And these guys were like gorillas on the street.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's why you got the responses you did.
Mm.
Well, the other thing I like about Smoke on the Water is that it is incredibly literal. I mean, you pull apart the lyrics of that song, it literally is, this is how we recorded this album. It is basically the liner notes to the album is Smoke on the Water. They went to record at this place, but somebody burnt the place down at a Frank Zappa gig that happened the weekend before with a flare gun. So they went to a hotel and they brought the Rolling Stones mobile recording unit, and it lyrically couldn't be dumber or more boring. But it's so literal, you have to respect that. Compared with Led Zeppelin singing shit about, you know, shit.
I didn't like the song, but normally I relate at least the first listen through to the songs that I know, and I didn't know most of the songs on this album, not even a little bit. Like, I think it's just so far out of my era because my parents never listened to music when I was a kid. Like, I didn't really get into music until I hit high school, so I'm missing a lot of this popular music from that generation. But I really enjoyed the rest of the album a lot more, and maybe it is just that exposure thing. I just haven't been. It's almost like listening to a new Wolf Mother album. You know, if you just badged at Wolf Mother and said, "Oh, this is the new Wolf Mother album," I wouldn't have. Other than the guy's vocals a bit different, but do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I would have shrugged and gone, okay, I don't know any of these songs. Is it Wolf Mother? Is it Deep Purple? I don't know. It doesn't date that much either. Like, they're just good songs.
Yeah, it's really dense with kind of bluesy jams, and that's kind of. I feel like that, you know, that's kind of a universal language of rock and roll is those kind of bluesy jams. It's an excellent driving album, particularly it's just got that. You know, it's got that driving groove thing going on. It really works quite well. Yeah, they were certainly more of a blues band than either Sabbath or Zeppelin. And it's and that's one of the things that informs Wolfmother, because Wolfmother is a very bluesy kind of band. There's a lot of songs that are structured around that fucking that 12-bar blues kind of progression. So they are still recording. They released an album this year. The band currently still has Ian Gillan, the lead singer, whose pipes are fantastic. Now, he's left and come back and left and come back multiple times in the last... I mean, this band's been around for 50 years. They formed in, like, 1967, 68.
It's almost like a football club now. You just have to keep it going.
Yeah. But so still got Ian Gillan. Still got Glover, who's the bass player. He's been and gone and come back. Still got Pace, the drummer. The guitarist has been... So Richie Blackmore is the guitarist. He was a wanker who no one could work with, and he went off and had a solo career. And he came back for a reunion thing, and then they couldn't deal with him, and he fucked off again. But they replaced him with Steve Morse, who was a little bit like one of those Stevie Vai, Joe Satriani, guitar wanker, virtuoso types. So he used to release those sorts of albums in the 90s, and then they got him in as a replacement guitarist. And they got John Lord, who was the organ player. And I think the organ is what defines Deep Purple, as distinct from Sabbath and Zeppelin and those other bands at the time.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have that organ doubling the bass and also doubling the guitar and giving that huge bottom end. Fortunately, John Lord passed away a few years ago, so they've got another organ player. I went and listened to their most recent album, and it is the closest thing I've heard them ever do to the sound that they had in 1972. It's really weird, but... they've never sounded more like they did in 1972 than they do in 2017.
Yeah. That's just nuts. I love organ.
Clip it! Put that in the episode.
I just think after Brass...
The title is I Love Organ.
Love Organ. After Brass, I just think any band that's got an organ in it, I'm down for.
You're a fucking organ.
Oh dear. Thank God Adam doesn't edit this podcast. That's all I can say.
But I've say also, if you've seen whenever you watch those classic album shows, you tend to get a feel for the personalities of the people in the band, and you tend to figure out really quickly who you like and who you don't. And yep. I've always really liked Ian Gillan, the lead singer of Deep Purple. He actually had a go at... He took over from... So when Ozzy Osbourne got kicked out of Black Sabbath, they got Ronnie James Dio in. And then Dio went off and did his own thing. And they got Gillan in. And it went horribly... It just did not work at all. Some of the stuff that happened in fucking Spinal Tap, the movie, was very, very similar to stuff that happened to Black Sabbath when Gillan was there. There was like a... They had like a little, like a little person who was dressed up as some kind of evil baby demon to represent the evil baby demon who's on the cover of Born Again, which was the comeback album with Gillan. And this evil baby demon was supposed to crawl along the thing, but it fell off the stage and hurt himself. And it was just horrendous. It was exactly like Black Sabbath. It was exactly like Spinal Tap, you know, with... the Stonehenge fucking monument like drawn in inches instead of feet, but even worse. And this all happened almost like around the same time or immediately before Spinal Tap did it. But Gillan was sort of said, I am not the right singer for this band. I think I need to get the fuck out of here. So he's like, sorry, see you later, find someone else. I'm fucking awful at this. So Not a guy. I mean, Blackmore, the guitarist, was a massive ego, but Gillan never really seemed like that kind of guy. And he's still got fucking amazing pipes. So I like that guy. Credit to him.
It's funny, hey, because I look at the Chili Peppers and the way Navarro came into that band, and everyone just said, "Oh, it's just shit," and you know, it's not going to work. And so he basically stayed for one album and left again, and they got Frusciante back. But everything Frusciante's done since has been shit, really.
Yeah. It wasn't Navarro's fault. I mean, actually, One Hot Minute isn't a terrible album. I mean, I think many, many years ago.
No, I would say, I would probably rated as my second
favorite. I can't remember whether it was you or whether it was Adam who was on the episode that when we reviewed that and made the case that it was actually better.
Yeah, that's wrong,
the classic album was One Hot Minute. I certainly don't agree that it is, but it's not as bad an album. It's certainly a better album than Californication.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Californication is dross.
Yeah.
And they're like you too. There's basically a point where they just drop off the cliff.
Yeah, where they just stop being relevant.
Mm.
Hopefully.
So what have you got?
We hit that point midway through last year.
What have you got for me that's new?
I want a really new and revolutionary band that you've never ever heard of, Custard.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting because Custard is one of my kids' favorite bands. They love Apartment. That's one of their favorite
Apartment
songs.
Apartment is such a good song. It is my favorite Custard song. But Dave McCormack can write a fucking pop song. Like he's just really, really good at writing pop songs.
Yeah, there's nothing like a 5-year-old and 2-3-year-old sitting in the back of the car hitting the whistling streets. It's just cracks me up every time.
And you've got a new singer and you've got a new song.
Got a new song.
Didn't advertise for the song. So
the common touch
for international listeners. Custard were a Brisbane indie pop band of the 90s and early noughties who were very important. It was part of that generation of bands that got picked up and endorsed by Triple J very heavily, like Spiderbait, Grinspoon, Regurgitator. There are many others. Went quiet for many a year. Kind of a Brisbane icon. And went quiet for many years. Came back, released an album not too long ago, and now this is another album they're doing. And one or two of their songs popped up on my various Spotify Discovery type devices. And they sound Dave McCormicky. And Dave McCormick
can
write a song.
That's good. Yeah, I'm pretty keen now, to listen to that one.
It's basically a race between Dave McCormack's songwriting ability and Generation X's ability to just become old and washed and sound like the fucking go-betweens. So it'll be interesting to see what we end up with this. And loath as I am to pick two legacy acts, the second legacy act I'm going to pick is a band called The Darkness.
Oh, okay.
Because they took a one-way ticket to hell and back. They were basically a cock rock, a hair metal parody act that sort of became big and then started to have the same career trajectory as all those cock rock hair metal acts did in the 80s, i.e. they all got on the wrong drugs and disintegrated. But they've sort of staged a remarkable comeback, small scale. I suspect they're sort of playing stages like Spinal Tap did at that jazz festival and puppet show. But I'm interested to see where their sound is and whether they're still taking the piss or how seriously they're taking themselves. Their album's called Pinewood Smile.
Which would be a reference to Pinewood Studios?
I would expect so.
Mm.
And okay. It's not on Spotify?
Yes, it is. I've already added it to the playlist.
Yeah, but... yes. I'm not that keen to put two legacy acts in, but, you know. We'll see. Let's face it, I keep picking bands that I've got great high hopes on and they turn out to be shit, so let's just go.
Yeah, but it's every now and again, though, you just get that Prodigy or that Chemical Brothers album and it's worth it.
So you have to kind of figure out what would be success for The Darkness. And you just say, well, producing an album that is as fun and effervescent and bombastic and as preposterous as Permission to Land, because that was a fucking, that was an amazing, stupefying, cretinous album. But it was so much fun. And if they can do that again, particularly in the context of the world that we live in right now, I think that would be really awesome. What would be success for that Custard album? Would it be just having a few bangers that are up there with McCormack's best production, you know, girls like that.
I'd just be happy with a nice listenable album, like nothing where I just thought that they weren't rammed firmly up their own ass.
Now, I've never really been that sure that Custard were a good album band, though. I mean, they're always a fantastic, fantastic singles band. They've always been produced, you know, really great, you know, Triple J bangers, if you like, for want of a better word. But I don't want to grade them on a curve and say, fucking, if this album turns out to be toilet, that's not representative of what they've done previously. I might have to go back and sort of bench test them against some of their better stuff in period too.
Hmm. Yeah.
What's their best album?
I was just looking at that.
This is where we need Albion Lovedend, our Castaro correspondent.
Hmm. I was trying to think because, let's see, what's the album's got to go back. What Weissenheimer is probably
that's,
there.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yep.
It's the one with Apartment on it, A Job in Rock and Roll, Dreamer, Lucky Star, and then We Have the Technology. I think was my favorite in period.
Yeah.
which was the next one, which was Hello Machine and Piece of Shit.
Love Rama? Because Love Rama had Girls Like That, hit song.
That's the next one. That's 99. Yep.
I always thought We Had the Technology was after Love Rama.
No, that was 97. Love Rama was 99. And then Come Back All Is Forgiven in 2015.
Anatomically correct. Yeah.
Yep.
Nice bird. Bird is a word. Music is crap. Aliens told us so.
Yeah, they did write a fucking good single, didn't they?
They did. The problem is I'm not sure if they wrote it. And Wahoodie Fandango, which was their first album. It's probably... What I suspect is there is a really good album in those three albums if you smash them together, but I've got a suspicion that might not be that good if you go back and listen to them. But we might have to find time to do that, which might be tricky because this is a Sunday. We normally record on a Friday, so we're on a short week. It's interesting how Bezo always negotiates it such that my albums get a short week and his get fucking 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah, that's true.
Particularly when they're shit house.
Okay, sure. Yes,
that's a German word. It means shit house.
The Killers wasn't exactly great. All right,
Primus
hear
was
about
a
my
gas.
Classic.
There's a joke.
All right, for the classic, I'm going back to the sweet spot.
I probably should have been recording this.
Kidding. You haven't been recording it. But this is an album that I loved in period and then probably haven't listened to for 15 years.
That bodes well, gentle listener.
No, only because of because the artist in went a different way, and so I sort of lost interest altogether. And I'm talking about No Doubt's Tragic Kingdom, because Stefani really, you know, they did this album.
That makes sense.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I can totally see why you would have distanced yourself from the output.
Yeah, because it's a little bit like the Black Eyed Peas. The Black Eyed Peas' first album is it's a really good album. I love that album. But I just stopped listening to it because the rest of their output was just absolute fucking garbage. And at the time, it was almost like, oh, you like the Black Eyed Peas. And so a lot of people that like new poppy shithouse Black Eyed Peas were like, oh, yeah, I love the Black Eyed Peas. And you'd have to go, which Black Eyed Peas?
Yeah, do you mean the hip-hop dance band or do you mean the fucking shithouse R&B pop band?
Yeah.
And I mean, with Stefani, when she went solo, just ran a mile from the pop-punk kind of 1994. I mean, Tragic Kingdom is as 1994 as shit gets.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's such a period piece. Yeah.
It'd be fun to see how badly it dates. And probably... Offspring Smash as well would be interesting to see how that dates.
I've been thinking about this one for quite a while, and I deliberately have not gone back and listened to it yet. I've sort of been curious about it and going, oh, I'm going to save that for a classic and just go in absolutely cold. Like, you know, 15 years between hearing the album in full. Like, obviously, it's hard. These songs kick around in weird places every now and again. But I definitely haven't. And I remember at the time, it was an album that I loved as an album. Like, it was something that I used to listen to all the way through. I thought it had a real flow as an album. So I'll be interested to see whether it holds up as an album as well.
Have you ever seen these guys live? Because they did play that infamous Livid, didn't they?
No. Oh, did they play the 90? Did they play the September 11 Livid?
No, they played the year before. They played the one, but
year before.
They played
the
one that set the tone for that one. But they played the one that was 44,000 people at the R&A Showground, and it was like 37 degrees, and all the goths who turned out to see the Cure melted. They were like puddles of black and white makeup. It was like somebody had melted Kiss. It was hilarious. I saw them play. Yeah, they played the big stage for that. No, it went from like No Doubt, Green Day. It was basically 1994 on the main stage. It was amazing. Mm. We should do Dookie at one point as well. It reminds me. Yes, this was a good album. It's not an album I owned, but it was an album every one of my friends owned, so I have heard it.
Yeah, it was a little bit like
that live album, Throwing Copper. Yeah. It was always in the mix somewhere. The moment that I stepped outside, so many reasons for me to run and hide.
I've always been tempted to pick Throwing Copper as an anti-classic album, to go back and listen to it and just go, was it really that bad?
I reckon that's not a bad idea. That's almost like the antithesis of the let's pick fucking Sergeant Pepper's to see what all the fuss was about. Let's pick something really terrible and see whether we can find anything redeeming in it.
But like, I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to find anything redeeming in the Counting Crows album that I had to listen through most of the end of high school.
Last year. Yeah.
And I don't have enough therapy sessions to get through my Pearl Jam block, but live Throwing Copper.
That's all right. Next time we get Adam on, I'm sure he's going to pick 10.
All of I told you, versus 10. Look, that's the thing. I think they're actually pretty good
albums.
There's
a good chance
I'll pick
Versus, because I like Versus a lot.
But I've just had it burned out of me so much.
But, man, it's like a macro version of fucking Smoke on the Water. You can't appreciate it because you've just, it's just been smashed in.
I heard it one million times in a year.
If you can play it on the fucking ukulele, it's probably been played.
It's probably been overdone.
So irritate my children by playing Smoke on the Water on the ukulele. Ban, 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 ban.
And on that note, gentle listeners, we will leave you. See you, Doc.
Cheers, man.